smart than it deserves to be in a dangerous world. Radical, extreme, less free, fair, strong, and smart. Those are very tough words. Is that really what you said?
It certainly is what I said, and it is what I mean. I think we are dealing with an administration that has thrown over the consensus building and the bipartisan agreement that basically built the 20th century America that I'm very proud of, that I'm a product of. And yes, you know, there may have been people more to the right or more to the left, but if you look at the efforts that were made starting in the 1930s to save capitalism from itself, to put us on the right track, to have the kind of middle class that would grow and provide ladders of opportunity for anybody willing to work hard. You look at how we built up alliances, the painstaking, frustrating work of working with other nations around the world. I don't think that this president had a mandate to do that coming out of the 2011.
But if you look at the president's main policies, Iraq, the tax cut, Medicare, in each case, he had significant support from Democrats. 29 Democrats on the Iraq resolution, a dozen on his tax cut, 11 just now on the Medicare prescription drugs. If these policies are so radical and extreme, why are so many Democrats going along?
Well, I voted for the Iraq resolution, as you might remember. And I'm a strong believer in giving the executive authority. I wish that when my husband was president, people in the Congress had been more willing to recognize presidential authority. You recall we didn't get authority to go into either Bosnia or Kosovo, and I think that was a mistake. But I regret the way the president has used the authority. I mean, it's one thing to say, you know, we're heading down a road that is rooted in the values and ideals and practicalities of what got us to this point, looking back at previous administrations. And there was an expectation about how that authority would be used, which, you know, frankly, I'm, you know, disappointed that it wasn't.
When you say that America is less free, are you referring to the Patriot Act?
I'm referring to a combination of factors. I think there are serious questions about the Patriot Act. Again, well, I voted for it.
Let me stop you right
yes,
there.
Sir.
Because Dianne Feinstein recently said, Senator Feinstein, in a hearing, my office has received 21,434 complaints, and almost all of them were about Patriot 2, which hasn't even been submitted and isn't the law, and most of the other complaints just didn't bear out. I mean, this is a part of the staple of campaign rhetoric during the presidential election, but...
Shut the hell up, George Will. This nonsense about who's less free because of the Patriot Act. How about Mohammed Butt? How about Padilla? How about the 5,000 detainees of South Asian and Arab descent, fool? I guess that type of freedom neglect doesn't count, huh? And then you got Miss Crime Bill Clinton, Hillary. What are you yapping about, talking about, and admitting that I voted for the Iraq resolution? I'm a strong believer in giving the executive authority. Well, I'm glad you admitted, Ms. Crime Bill. In other words, you believe in state capital terrorism. That's just what your executive authority knuckleheads like your husband, Crime Bill, and Boy George have done with it. And then you babble out. I regret the way Boy George has used his authority. Listen, Boy George has used his authority like the Silk Road strategist for the U.S. world corporate empire and dollarism have outlined for him and other minions to follow. Here's the antidote, slave time. Check this out. Listening to 104.1, 96.3 Santa Cruz, 106.7 Illinois, LUVER.com, the world's slave revolt. Tonight, we're going to blast right into a Beyond the Shadow segment as it deals with how the Democrats at least the three, Mosley, Braun, Sharpton, and Kucinich, are somehow victims of the corporate media world. I've heard it all now. And then we'll blast into other issues concerning the illusion of the world. So we got all that and a hell of a lot more on 104.1 Slave Revolt Radio.
Did you expect me to vote for the lesser of two evils? Never. It's more like the evil of two lessers. That's like saying, M, choose your oppressor. Pick one, Jeffrey Dahmer or Hannibal Lecter. You want crack, coke, Pepsi, or Dr. Pepper. They all effed up, and neither one of them better. Because crack is like a Democrat, cocaine Republican, marijuana independent party, same government. You really think your vote counts? Ask my folk down in Florida, didn't they straight throw they vote out? And them crackers act innocent, knowing they depend on this, benefiting from hush money from big businesses. Money is the president, dead prayers, dollar bill, and I bet no convention ain't spending this. Soon they gonna need us, believe us. When did these cats pick rappers to be political leaders? Don't be pawns, be Lolita LeBrons. Run up on them arm like mother, it's on. If Congress don't make progress, let's change the process. No more times running for office. Talking like that, these people will call you crazy. What's crazy is ain't no difference between me and Jay-Z. The same boat brought us the same place from slavery, so we rock the same chains anyway, baby, baby.
Attention, seekers everywhere. I was right. Everything I knew was wrong.
Shadow. You know, recently Ted Koppel asked a couple of the Democrats who are vying for candidacy of the president, Carol Mosley Braun, Dennis Kucinich, and Al Sharpton, when basically they were going to hang it up. And he more or less phrased it as a thing that you don't have the points, the constituents, and you don't have the money. And now that old Gore has tipped his hat towards one of you candidates, what is this really all about? It seems that a large segment of the progressive community, you expect the conservative, has kind of latched on to this poor Mosley, Braun, Kucinich, Sharpton type of analysis, as if they are somehow a part of the victims of this recent situation that has transpired. We're going to explore that and take it beyond the shadows. But first off, let's hear directly what a old Koppel had to say to a Braun, Kucinich, and Sharpton, and we'll take it step by step from there. Check it out.
This is a question to Ambassador Braun, Reverend Sharpton, Congressman Kucinich. You don't have any money, or at least not much. Reverend Sharpton has almost none. You don't have very much, Ambassador Braun.
You raised $4.5 million. I mean, that's not nothing.
You got about $750,000 in the bank right now, and that's close to nothing when you're coming up against this kind of opposition. But let me finish the question. The question is, will there come a point when polls money, and then ultimately the actual votes that will take place here in places like New Hampshire, the caucuses, and Iowa. Will there come a point when we can expect one or more of the three of you to drop out, or are you in this as sort of a vanity candidacy? Reverend Sharpton, you go first.
Well, first of all, I think the fact that I'm doing so well in many states in the polls and ahead in national polls of people with far more money shows that I know how to deal with the national deficit probably better than anybody on this stage. So I think that in all seriousness, Ted, the problem is that we are reducing politics to people with money. I think that Americans want people with ideas. The suggestion is that if you can't buy your way now, that you can't seek the highest office in the land. That is to really sell the White House. I think that people with no money that can generate the kind of support I'm generating, that can galvanize a lot of young people, a lot of people that left this party and voted for Ralph Nader. This is what wins elections. I refuse to allow us to continue to act like the person with the best dollar or the biggest dollar has the best message. If money's going to win this, Bush is going to win. Nobody up here is going to raise the money Bush raises. What we must do is raise the votes he can't get, and you can't buy those votes.
We're talking about two things. We're talking about money, and we're talking about ultimately standing in the polls. There are only a couple of ways that you can measure how someone is doing at this stage in the election process: money and polls. You're not doing terribly well with money. You're doing even worse in the polls.
Well,
when do you pull out?
When I take the oath of office, when you're there to cover it. And I can tell you, Ted, you know, we started at the beginning of this evening talking about an endorsement. Well, I want the American people to see where the media takes politics in this country. We start talking about endorsements. Now we're talking about polls, and then we're talking about money. Well, you know, when you do that, you don't have to talk about what's important to the American people. Ted, I'm the only one up here on a stage that actually voted against the Patriot Act and voted against the war. The only one on the stage. I'm also one of the few candidates up here who's talking about taking our health care system from this for-profit system to a not-for-profit, single-payer, universal health care for all. I'm also the only one who has talked about getting out of NAFTA and the WTO and going back to bilateral trade conditioned on workers' rights, human rights, and the environment. Now, I may be inconvenient for some of those in the media, but, you know, I'm sorry about that.
Now, what's interesting about some of the things that were said was that, some of the things that Sharpton and Kucinich had to say weren't all that bad, but it has to be taken within a certain context. And essentially what I'm saying is that they are working for the Democratic Party that has done, in collaboration with the Republican Party, in the corporate market system, all of these things that they are now complaining about. When Sharpton says that the problem is that we are reducing politics to money, as if politics has not already intentionally been reduced in this market system to money. The reason why you have a genetically modified food run amok without any real systematic labeling system has to do with politics and the power of lobbying within the bourgeois political system. The reason why we have these three holes in the ozone and the U.S. Empire doing everything it can to bail out of any type of real obligation to be part of a global community to deal with ozone depletion and global pollution through crude oil has a lot to do with economics being reduced to market systems. I mean, there's been all types of documents of, you know, like Congress on $1 million a day, where it basically means that if you're going to run for Congress, or if you wish to maintain a seat after you receive one, you have to raise $1 million a day. Now, this money does not just float out of the Mississippi. It floats out of the corporations that are polluting the Mississippi River, which is why it has a 7,500-foot dead zone in it. Because of all of these toxic runoffs and because of the petroleum industry, which our agricultural system is based on, that run off into this major artery. Now, the reason why this is not a discussion for the masses is because those who are part of the corporate media system are tied to and a part of those who are part of the polluting industries and other things, food industry, et cetera, et cetera. And their priority is capital markets, i.e. money, investments, trade, riches. So politics gets reduced once again to money. And the Democrats have been working hand in hand to reduce it and remove as many people as possible, the masses as possible, from having grassroots connections to the day-to-day issues that affect us. So, Ted Koppel says there will come a point when the polls say it and the money says it. When will you drop out? Well, obvious that within the electoral process, it's going to become clear after, you know, certain states are voted on and all of that type of stuff, who's going to be their little Democratic candidate. So why is there a push? And part of the reason is that you have a situation where there's a push to quell as much discussion and debate as possible. This is part of the Gumpification process. It's not that there's a great vigorous debate on a true intellectual and global scale of such magnitude of a U.S. empire being involved in so many and having so many effects on the day-to-day lives of people in this country and throughout the world. But even just a little chat they do back and forth it goes beyond the parameters that those in the corporate media world are used to like to see and hear being discussed. So they want to quell it down as quick as possible and then just basically have two easy candidates, Democrats and Republicans, go full steam ahead. And once again, that's going to be engineered as how much money can be, bought up by the candidates, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a simplification, a gumpification of what should be.